This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The French have this word, terroir, and it means roughly the unique characteristics that a specific place imparts to a food or drink produced there. The grass a cow eats affects the flavor of its milk. How the farmers turn the milk into cheese makes a difference as well. And these sort of factors contribute to a food's terroir. French also have a great many rules regarding the production of food and drink aimed at ensuring the integrity of this terroir. A new NC State University study finds that protecting the integrity of terroir is also good for farmers. Sarah Bowen is the author of a study, and she joins me now to talk about her findings. Also with me is Martha Mobley, cattle farmer at Meadow Lane Farm in Lewisburg, North Carolina. Martha is also an agriculture extension agent in Franklin County. Sarah and Martha, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
Great to be here.
So, Sarah, tell me a little bit about your study. Now, it began with you taking a look at the agave plant, which is used to make tequila, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had done some research in Mexico looking at the environmental and social effects of the land use change to agave there. And what I saw was that it really wasn't benefiting the farmers. It wasn't economically doing very much for the regions, and then it was also having some environmental effects. So from there, I started looking into the denomination of origin, which is protects tequila and says that tequila must be produced in a particular place in Mexico. And denominations of origin or geographical indications have gotten a lot of attention.
And these are internationally recognized standards. So when you get the label, there's a standard that goes along with it. And those of us in the know, if we happen to care about tequila, know it means something.
Right. And they've gotten a lot of attention, especially from producers in Latin America and Asia lately, as a potential way to protect production from those places and contribute to rural development. But what I found was that in the case of tequila, although it has been very successful in terms of expanding the market for tequila, that it hasn't really had a positive effects for the rural region.
And so what goes wrong here? There's still more agave being grown and more tequila being made and consumed, and yet the benefit isn't going back. What went wrong?
For one thing, one of the problems is that the label that protects tequila, the geographical indication, it does regulate the quality of the final product in terms of things like the ethanol content, which is very important for consumer safety, but it does not regulate how the product is produced. So over time, as tequila has become more successful, it's become more and more industrialized, and a lot of the smaller tequila producers, the smaller distilleries, are getting pushed out or getting bought out by these huge multinational liquor companies. Then in terms of the farmers, the region is very large, and it includes areas that don't really have a historic tradition of growing agave. And the tequila companies have started to move into those regions and producing their own agave. And so as that has happened, the price has gone down, and right now it's below the cost of production. So a lot of farmers are just choosing to let their agave rot in their fields rather than try to sell it at that price.
All right. And then in contrast now, you did find some things that worked really well. Comté cheese in France, for instance. So what was going on? What did they do right?
In the Comté case, which is pretty well known, especially in Europe and France, as being an example of a geographical indication that has really worked well for the farmers in the rural regions, I would say the main thing that they do right is that they have set up the protective agreement in a way that protects the quality and the traditional methods all along the supply chain. So because they believe in the terroir and because they believe that the terroir is, as they say, what the cow eats.
Well, and it's their word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. But go
and
ahead.
They have this cultural, right, so they have a cultural advantage.
Yeah.
Because of that, the rules state that the cows have to have a minimum amount of pastureland in their diet. And this ends up having a positive effect in terms of the concentration of the farms and the environmental effects on the region. But then it also has an effect on the quality of the cheese because they believe that that contributes to a more diverse flavors in the milk and a more interesting cheese.
Now, how do cheese eaters know this?
How do they?
Yeah, I mean, how do we know that this is going on? I mean, do we just eat it? We like it, and we have a show of preference for it. But do we know that all of these judgments and factors have gone in, and there's this much oversight in the production process?
And how we know, and the real advantage of these kind of labels is because of the label. It is defined by the producers themselves, which I think is a real advantage of the French system. So it's not being imposed by the state. But then the French government has an organization that oversees all of the labels and makes sure that they're complying with the rules. So when you see Comté cheese, whether it's in the United States or in Paris or in some small village in France, you know that it means something.
Now, Martha, you work in Franklin County. You've raised cattle there and worked as an ag agent for years. Franklin County does not have this geographic, this federally designated, you know, region, but you're working to develop an identity. How do you do that in the absence of this kind of designation?
It's getting back to what Sarah was just saying. The farmers have to buy into the program. They have to see this going to be successful. For example, in the past month, Frank, I've had two farmers that have been on the borderline saying, I don't know if I want to start raising grass-fed natural beef like these other farmers are doing in the Alliance, or until they see it successful. And then once something's successful and they hear that the farmers can make a profit, but it's going to take extra work, extra time from that farmer, then they want to join that Alliance or that group of farmers that help market meat or market different types of vegetables.
So that's the first step, is to get farmers to sign on and to all agree among each other what the standard should be. But I guess then the next trick is to come up with some way of standardizing it and for all of us to trust that standard or what that label means.
That's right. And then the cooperative extension also provides training, such as beef quality assurance training courses. And I teach that in our region. And then the farmers must attend classroom instruction, outdoor training, live animal training, and then pass a written exam in order to be beef quality assurance trained.
And this is from something called the Franklin County Natural Beef Alliance.
That's correct.
That you all have formed in the county.
That's right.
And then the question is, how well is that recognized outside the county or even within Franklin County? Do I know as a consumer what that means?
Right. We have had that on. We request that our farmers in the Alliance have that delegation or their connection with this Alliance label on their beef product. Also, we do have a marketing website, FranklinCountyFarmFresh.com, that includes the Beef Alliance and also all of our vegetable producers in the county, whether they be organic or conventional, as long as they produce high-quality local products is what we're...
Sarah, then is that enough, or do you need some kind of outside imprimatur to guarantee that this is really what this alliance says it is?
I think it's important to remember that the French have been doing this for more than 100 years, and we're just starting. So, of course, you know, it's a gradual process. I do think that it's important eventually to have some way of guaranteeing, and different countries do it in different ways. In the French case, they have an interprofession, which is sort of a cooperative organization that is in charge of most of that. In Mexico, the state has given the power of certification to a nonprofit private organization, and they're doing a good job with the standards that exist. In Mexico, it's more that there aren't very many. So different places do it differently.
Well, and of course you've got different goals, because I'm guessing that in Franklin County you're really not thinking at this moment about exporting beef or having an international brand attached to the term Franklin County beef.
That's right. Ours is mainly focusing on the local food movement. And we know that the potential in our area where we're located, to Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, that there is a movement to buy local fresh food.
Does that change? Are you going to finish that thought?
That's our goal, and we do. I have worked with cooperatives before, Frank, back in 2001, in past 5 or 6 years, and that was run by board of directors of the actual goat producers in North Carolina. And I did see some of the problems and challenges with that, especially with the competition of a locally raised goat versus the imported goat prices. And the local goat was much more expensive. Once we had to pay for the transportation and the slaughter fees, but we did have a statewide goat producers meat label that went on all of the meat that was produced.
Now, how about the economics of this? Is there a chance, you know, we talked about the agave farmers, didn't work out for them for a variety of reasons. Is it beneficial? Does more of the money stay with the farmer under this kind of sustainable model, or is it still more profitable to be in industrial agriculture?
It all depends, because the cattle industry is still not controlled by it's made up of small farms, and it's supply and demand. When the prices of these calves are high, a lot of these farmers would just go ahead and take these animals onto the local auction barns or either ship them out to the feedlots in the Midwest. When the price of cattle are less expensive, they will, and they're just breaking even, they says, okay, this is the year that I need to think about direct marketing my commodity that I produce. Let's give Martha a call and sit down and maybe attend that training course, and so I can be certified that I have been beef quality assurance training. And then we have the differences between, do they want to be natural, certified as natural, or do they want to be certified organic? So it's different types of avenues out there that the farmers can use in marketing their products.
And that's gotten a little confusing, too. I think some of these terms, natural, doesn't mean as much often as we think it does, or the term applied to meat may not be what it means, you know, to chicken or eggs and that sort of thing. And that's a part of the confusion, isn't it, Sarah, to some extent, in this kind of marketing?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of terms, and if the consumer knows the farmer, then it's not a problem because they can talk about it and they have trust in the farmer. And when the labels come in is when the consumers are not buying directly from the farmer. This kind of place-based label wouldn't be necessary if all the consumers were buying the cheese right from the producers. But then as there are more and more labels, the consumers become confused, and that is sort of magnified in cases where some labels are not particularly well-regulated in terms of exactly what they mean. And then others, like organic, mean something very specific. So
does government involvement in this help or hurt the process of if what you're trying to do, and I know it's slightly different than your research, but if what you're trying to do is support sustainable agriculture practices, does the government help or hinder that by coming up with these labeling plans?
I guess obviously it would depend on how the government had decided to define certain labels. But in general, I think that having the government involved can be very helpful because the government can sort of level the playing field and make sure that the rules are clear and make sure that everyone is following them. And in the case of tequila, I think that one of their problems is that the government has not been very involved. And so because of that, these powerful multinational liquor companies have sort of been able to sort of take over the commodity chain, and the farmers and the smaller producers really don't have a lot of recourse.
On the other hand, Martha, we know that one of the struggles for small farmers is in the processing, and some of the federal standards which have to do with is processing tons and tons and tons of beef, those kind of standards which wouldn't apply at a smaller level, are very costly.
Well, and as you know, Frank, we received a grant that starts July 1st to do a feasibility study for a state-of-the-art small processing facility in the Franklin County region. Instead of our farmers having to take off a half a day just to travel to take their animals, then to go back and pick the animals up, this will give them more control if they can have a part in the selection of this the people who are hired, and they will have a part in the selection of the feasibility consultants, the design. So I want, as a government employee, want to involve my farmers and let them have a role in this, either as a board of directors or as on the selection committee. But then we do have to, I see as a government official, I do have to help them get started, whether searching for grants, searching for funds to help develop websites and marketing information.
Well, Sarah, how does this, is there much correlation and value do you see in your research in developing countries, things that can be applied locally and in the United States when it comes to this sustainability movement?
I think there are some overlaps. And one of the things that is interesting is that when you look at Europe, Europe has a very long history of producing these products and a much more static kind of culture around them than we do. And because of that, the French government, other governments have decided to capitalize and market on that, and it's had really good benefits. In the U.S., we have a newer history. We have a more dynamic history with more immigration. We really value innovation. So if we were going to think about using these kind of place-based labels, which I think can have really positive effects, we would have to think about how would we do that in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And
so you do think there are cultural, well, I call them barriers at the moment here in the United States to getting something like that going.
I think we have such a unique context socially and culturally and historically, and so to do it would be a challenge. But if we could sort of think of a system that works for us, it could help some of the other countries in Latin America that also have kind of more dynamic histories and histories of immigration and less static food cultures.
Some of the things we do here could also have an impact on the economies of developing countries as they try to develop these
I think it might be another way. So the French way has worked really well for France, and I think it has a lot of lessons.
We just don't do the French way here, okay? Which is not going to be. In fact, even terroir, we have to come up with a new name. I think Freedomois. It's going to be Freedomois, but then we can sell. So, Martha, I know you visited Uruguay recently, and you were taking a look at how they're developing local markets. What were some of the things you learned and imparted?
And I was just amazed how similar they are to our farms and how diverse. Diversity is key to be having successful small farms here in North Carolina. And it was very obvious in my trip there and visiting with their farms there that they did have a diversity of a cooperative of several farms worked together. They had their own refrigerated truck, even though it was a very economically depressed country at the time. But they were all making it work. It was run by that group of farmers. They had pulled their money, resources to buy that refrigerated truck and to start putting their own cooperative label on their lettuces and their cabbages and their vegetables and then shipping it to the local grocery stores and working with the grocery stores to market.
And so that made a difference to local buyers, to people who were buying food in Uruguay,
yes,
in those markets.
Yes, it certainly was. And it was just beginning. And we went into those grocery stores and saw that section where the farmers were taking their product and then seeing that label that they were from that cooperative. And they seemed to work together. And that's what I'm trying to get our farmers in our area. Let's pull together and pull together our resources and work together. And that's when you're going to have power in marketing your product.
Sarah, how about other developing countries? You talked about Europe and then Mexico, but does this have implications for countries? I'm thinking of countries in Africa particularly that are well-suited to deliver agricultural products.
Mm-hmm. I think that this could be a lot of countries in Latin America and Africa have, you know, agriculture is one of their main sources of the economy, but it's mostly just sort of commodity crops, and this could be a way of branding their crops. And a lot of countries have started to do this for coffees, especially Ethiopian Yirgacheffe, right, or Colombian coffee or Guatemalan Antigua. Not just coffee, but that's one example.
And is it more successful with coffee? Is that more like Conte cheese than agave in most cases? Or
I think it's hard to say because they're brand new. And tequila is unique because they started this in the 70s, and so they're the oldest non-European country. But I hope that the coffees will be more successful.
Sarah, Martha, thank you both for being on the program today. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Sarah Bowen is an assistant professor of sociology and anthropology at NC State. Martha Mobley is a cattle farmer and agricultural extension agent in Franklin County and runs Meadow Lane Farm in Lewisburg. Coming up on The State of Things, meet globe-trotting scuba diving author, teacher, journalist from Durham on The State of Things. It's going to happen next. I promise. Stay tuned.